Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Welcome to our fourth day of our seminar. And today we're going to discuss the Brahma Vimohana Lila. Lord Brahma steals the cowherd boys and the calves from Krishna. And this represents the anatha of thinking that the Lord's Aishvarya feature is more important than his Madhurya feature. Aishvarya, of course, means his opulence. Like Lord Narayan and Vaikuntha. And Madhurya means his sweetness. Krishna, the cowherd boy in Sri Vrindavan Dham. So this is what happened with Lord Brahma. Of course, Lord Brahma, we mentioned at the beginning, not all the people involved in these different incidents are demons. And Lord Brahma is not a demon. He's the head of our sampradaya, so he's really a great devotee. But in this situation, he became overpowered somehow or other by the illusory energy of the Lord. Somehow or other. Very transcendental arrangement. And as a result, he was operating very materialistically, at least, maybe not really demoniacally, you know, like in the Govardhan Leela, Lord Indra tried to kill Krishna and Radharani and the cows and Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. That's pretty bad, isn't it? That's pretty demoniac. You know, if you want to kill anyone, generally, it's pretty demoniac, but try and kill Radharani and the cows. You can't make any excuses for that. So here, though, Lord Brahma, he does something pretty bad, stealing the calves and the cowherd boys just to harass Krishna, give Krishna a hard time. That's pretty bad. Actually, you know, interesting point, in the Madhva branch of our sampradaya, they don't accept this part of the Bhagavatam. They regard it as, you know, what's technically called interpolation, means some people came along later and inserted it, but that it's not really authentic, that it never really happened like that. But of course, we don't accept that. We take it as it is. That Krishna, like Arjuna really on the battlefield, Krishna chose him. Because in order to make the really important points, you can't really use the non-devotees. Like just imagine if Krishna was preaching on the battlefield of Kurukshetra instead of to Arjuna. He preached to Duryodhana or someone, and he would get to the point where Arjuna says, right, I surrender. But Duryodhana or whoever, some materialist, says, no, I don't believe it. I'm not going to fight. So these are all very important, transcendental occurrences, transcendental happenings. So therefore the Lord chooses some great devotee. and places them under illusion in some very special way that is not really, certainly not like us. You know, we shouldn't think that, look, here's Lord Brahma. He is no better than me. So, I'm okay. No, he's a lot better than us. But it was Krishna's arrangement. Just to show that even some big person, even some big devotee, if he really becomes somehow or other influenced by the illusory energy, then even some big person like Lord Brahma, they can become bewildered. So what about us? But the point on the other hand is that even us, even though, with all due respect to you, but at least I can speak for myself, even though we're pretty useless, right? We're pretty hopeless cases. But even us, if we really stick at Krishna's lotus feet, even us, we can get delivered from this material world. Even us, despite everything. So, in other words, no one, in a sense, no one so big they can't get into Maya if they really want to. But no one is so small spiritually that if they want to go back to Godhead, they wouldn't be able to. It just depends on you. All right, so now, this pastime then, this is another important pastime, like the Damodar Leela. It's a very prominent pastime. Do you know when this pastime took place? I mean, what day? Balaram's appearance day, correct. And we can tell that. Do you know how we can tell that? Anyway, it sort of becomes apparent, at least, put it that way, because Balaram does not participate. He's not mentioned in this pastime, except for right at the end. Anyway, we'll come to that in due course. But in the initial pastime, when the stealing goes on, Lord Balaram's not there. And if you look in the pictures, in the Bhagavatam, you'll see, there's Krishna. I think you know the picture, famous picture, surrounded by these cowherd boys. All the prasadam is there, and everyone's facing Krishna, offering it to Krishna, and very happy. But Balaram's not there. He's not there. Normally you'll find pictures, Krishna's going out herding the cows and so on. Balaram will be there also. But he's not. He doesn't participate in this pastime, except at the end, because it happened on Lord Balaram's appearance day. And this pastime, it occurs in the afternoon. The afternoon of the day that Krishna killed Agasura. That's mentioned also quite clearly. That after saving the boys and calves from the mouth of Agasura, Lord Krishna brought them all to the bank of the river and said, "Let's have lunch here. This is a nice spot." So the killing of Agasura also happened on Balaram's appearance day. And similarly, just for the record, although we're not going to discuss it during this part of our seminar, but the subduing of Kaliya also took place on Balaram's birthday. And that's why he was also not there. In fact, Mother Yashoda and others, they lament when they first hit, they were back in the village. And when the news came through that Krishna is trapped, by some great serpent in the middle of the Yamuna, and it looks bad, looks very bad. So immediately some of them responded that we knew we shouldn't have let them go out without Balaram, because he's the older brother. He would have protected them. But just see what happened, because Balaram wasn't there. We're not going to let this happen again. I mean, if we get out of this. Yeah. So the Kaliya Leela also happened on Lord Balaram's appearance day. And in fact, Sanatan Goswami describes, Balaram was at home with Mother Rohini having like a private birthday party. Yes. So, there we are. Well, yesterday we talked about the Damodar Leela. Krishna is a little boy. He's a small boy running around and getting up to mischief and so on like this at home with his mother. Now, this Brahma Vimohana Leela, Krishna is older. Krishna's maybe 4 or 5, something like that. And Krishna is now herding the calves, not the cows, the calves, the little baby cows. There's a very nice description of, in Gopal Champu of Jiva Goswami, of the first day Krishna went out herding the calves. You familiar with that? You heard about that? Krishna? Krishna was 3. It was the Gopastami day. You know, many of these pastimes, we don't really know what day they happened on, but some we do. So this pastime happened on the Gopastami day in Kartik. And Krishna, for a little while before, he had been transcendentally pestering Nanda Maharaj. I want to herd the cows. I want to herd the cows. But Krishna was 3. You know what it's like. You know what a 3-year-old is like, right? Not terribly competent and, you know, pretty small, flimsy little body. So Nanda Maharaj, well, particularly Mother Yashoda, was trying to avoid it by making different excuses and arguing against this. But Nanda Maharaj, he eventually said, look, the cows are too big. You are little, 3-year-old Krishna. The cows, you know, some of them may weigh 1 ton. So you're too small. But you can take out the calves. So Krishna was satisfied with that. So on that Gopastami day, they had a celebration. Because Krishna, he's now taking up the family tradition. He's entering into the whole program of the whole family tradition, dynasty tradition. So everyone gave Krishna presents to do with cow herding. Someone gave him a rope, because sometimes the cows run away. You've got to put a rope around their neck and pull them like that. Someone gave him a stick for guiding the cows from behind. You've got to tap on their rear ends or something. And someone gave him a buffalo horn. And someone gave him a flute. They say this was the first day Krishna got his first flute on that Gopastami day when he was 3. And what did Mother Yashoda give? Mother Yashoda gave him some shoes. You know, these quaint little, sort of esoteric little shoes, multicolored. Sometimes they have mirrors on them. Well, in those days they had jewels on them, with a little pointy toe that turns up. You know what I mean? May have little bells on them. Really. Interesting little shoes. So Mother Yashoda gave Krishna a pair of these shoes. and one umbrella with a servant. It was also a multicolored umbrella, same type of thing. And said, here, you take it. You're going out. You're going to be out all day, climbing the hills and through the forests and over the rocks and the thorns and everything. So you wear these shoes. And you'll be out in the hot sun. So we have our servant here. He'll carry your umbrella. You'll be okay. Krishna said, no, I'm not taking them. I'm not taking them. Unless you get me a pair of shoes, or rather, four shoes for each calf, and a servant, an umbrella for each calf, and there were 900,000 calves or so. You know, 3,600,000 shoes. Unless you get these things, I'm not taking them. And Mother Yashoda said, come on. You know, you're a human. They're just animals. They live like that. It's okay. Don't worry about it. Krishna said, no. I am not taking them unless you provide for the calves. So this little argument went back and forth. And Krishna finally said, look, the cows are our religion. They're our lives. How can I take anything better than the cows? And you see pictures of Krishna taking a calf into the house. Can you imagine that? Taking a calf into the house. The cows live in the house. We have dogs, right? Living in the house. Riding in the motor car. But dogs, Prabhupada, of course, traditionally in the Vedic tradition, dogs are not appreciated. And they're pretty useless, isn't it? I mean, they're pretty offensive at that. Did you ever experience a cow barking at you? Or maybe they'd moo at you. Did you ever, and dogs are useless, did you ever try drinking dog's milk? I don't know what that's like, but they have milk. So anyway, Krishna was saying, forget it. They're our religion. They're our lives. He said, I will not take anything better than the cows. And that's it. Then Krishna spoke one important little sutra. Dharmo rakshati rakshataha. Dharmo rakshati rakshataha. One who protects dharma becomes protected by that same dharma. In other words, you uphold your Krishna consciousness, it will uphold you. You keep your Krishna consciousness going nicely, it'll keep you going nicely. Krishna consciousness is complete in itself, self-sustaining unit, like that. So that was the first day. Anyway, this is later, but Krishna's still herding the calves, not the cows yet. Still with the calves. So, in the morning, first demon, what did we say on the first day? That kill the first demon and then lunch break. So that's exactly what is happening here. Krishna killed Agasura, then they went to the Yamuna, and Krishna told them, this is the right place. We'll take our lunch break. So they sat down, all sitting around facing Krishna, opened their lunch boxes. And what were they thinking? Were they thinking, I hope my mother made my favorite samosas so I can enjoy them for lunch? No, they were thinking that we hope our mothers made our different favorite preparations so we can offer them to Krishna. And that's what they did. They were just offering them to Krishna. And Krishna was taking a little nibble, giving it back, and so on. And they were relishing this. Just relishing having this exchange. Loving exchange with Krishna. And you know what Krishna has in his lunchbox? Actually, no, Prabhupada one time, Prabhupada said, I only have one anxiety. My anxiety is, what is in Krishna's lunchbox? So in Krishna's lunchbox, there's every type of samosa, every type of kachori, every type of chutney, every type of sabji, every type of sweet, rasgulla, sandesh, laddu, burfi, all your favorites. I don't want to disturb you. We've still got 45 minutes before lunch, but every type of everything, because it is a transcendental lunchbox. It's not yet like your ordinary lunchbox. Yeah, so that this was all going on, and the calves, well, they tied them to the trees. That's what it says in the Bhagavatam. They tied them to the trees. And there they were, the cowherd boys and Krishna, absorbed in this ecstatic exchange, incredible exchange of fraternal, friendly love. Suddenly they noticed, hey, what happened to the calves? All the calves disappeared. Actually, somehow they got loose. They wandered off into the forest. But then they really disappeared. Because actually, during this time, Lord Brahma had come. And he took the calves. He came for the first time, at least. So there they were. And the boys got into anxiety. This is terrible. What are we going to tell our parents? Sorry, lost all the calves. What are we going to do? So they're in terrible anxiety. But Krishna, it's described very nicely in the Bhagavatam, Krishna told them, you don't worry. I'll go and find them. You stay. You continue with your lunch. And I'll find the calves. So Prabhupada there in one purport, he explains that this is a wonderful example of how Krishna is very kind to his devotees. He was enjoying lunch himself and enjoying this loving exchange. But to be merciful as an exchange with his devotees, he took the trouble to go to find the calves. Who knows where they may have been? They could have been a long way away, could have been very difficult, so many calves, but Krishna didn't want to bother the cowherd boys. So he said, you just carry on, I'll get the calves. So who knows what Krishna was eating? I mean, exactly, at that moment, yes? Fruit and yogurt and rice. And which hand? Left hand. This is informal stuff. We're having fun here in the forest with the boys, so we don't care. Left hand. So off he went with a hand, left handful of prasadam, or bhoga or whatever. Fruit in yogurt with rice. And even finally, you know, eventually after some time, when Lord Brahma came back and so on, he still had the yogurt and fruit and rice in his left hand. So off Krishna went, holding his food, his bhoga, or whatever, leaving the cowherd boys. And what happened? Lord Brahma came again, and he stole the cowherd boys. Here's a little secret. I don't know if you're aware. I think a lot of devotees may not be aware. He didn't steal the real cowherd boys. Did you know that? They were Maya cowherd boys and calves. So Sanatan Goswami explains in his purports into this chapter that for a whole year, because the whole pastime is only wound up after a year, for the whole year, the cowherd boys and the calves were just wandering in the forest. But by the arrangement of Yogamaya, even though, you know, like the cowherd men, they take out the cows. It's not that Krishna's the only one taking out cows or calves or whatever. The cowherd men take out the calves also. And the cowherd boys and calves were wandering in the same forest by the Yamuna. They didn't go some long way away or anything. They were right in the vicinity for 1 year. But the cowherd men, nobody saw them. Neither did they feel like they were lost or anything was wrong or they should go home or do anything about it. They were quite happy. They must have been doing everything. Somehow life was going on. They didn't even notice it themselves. And finally, when Krishna found them again, then they said, "Oh, you brought back the calves very quickly. You're really clever. We haven't even finished lunch yet." That was a year later. So anyway, there they were. They were stolen. Wow. Or whatever. This transcendental arrangement went on. So Krishna then manifested cowherd boys and calves who looked identical to the originals. In every respect, their mentalities, what to speak of their physical forms. And they all went back. They were all expansions of Krishna. So, we know, isn't it, that the cowherd boys, I mean, the parents at least, and the cows, the parents of the calves, they all loved Krishna more than their own children. And they were all thinking, "It would have been really nice to have Krishna as my son. Anyway, it's okay. He's the son of Mother Yashoda, and I'm connected with him. But it would really have been nice if Krishna was my son." And the cows were thinking that our calves are really nice. It would have been nice to have Krishna as our calf or whatever, as our child. But anyway, that's all right. We have the calves. But it would have been nice. And the gopis, they were thinking, you know, when we grow up, we're going to get married to these cowherd boys, you know, the local boys. We would all like to marry Krishna, but probably he'll only marry one of us. It'll probably be Radharani. And we would have liked it to have been us, but we're going to have to marry these other cowherd boys. But we would prefer to marry Krishna. So all these people were thinking in these different ways. But now, here is Krishna. He is the cowherd boys. He is all the calves. So all the cows and all the mothers, they found that their love for their children became like their love for Krishna. They couldn't even understand. How is it? Now I'm not so worried about having Krishna as my son. Now I'm happy to have my own son as my son. What happened? But it was because their son or their calf was Krishna. And they were actually feeling love for Krishna in a very real way. And in Brahma Vaivarta Purana, there's a nice story. How Krishna, one day during the course of that year, Krishna told Nanda Maharaj, you know, I heard this is a good year for weddings. So I know we're a bit young, but why don't you arrange the marriages of all the cowherd boys to all the cowherd girls? You know, they're still only 5 years old or something like that, but why don't we just do it? And Nanda Maharaj, he didn't ask, well, how do you know it's a good year for marriages? Who told you that? He's usually easily convinced by Krishna. So Nanda Maharaj said, yes, that's a good idea. We'll have a mass wedding. And all the gopis, when they heard that idea, because now they are, you know, transcendentally becoming attracted to these other cowherd boys, because they're Krishna, just like they're attracted to Krishna. And previously they were thinking, well, you know, Radharani will marry Krishna. We're going to be stuck with one of these other boys. So, but now they were thinking, yeah, okay, that's all right. Let's get married. I don't mind. I'll marry any one of them. Because they were all Krishna. So there was a mass wedding. That's there in Brahma Vaivarta Purana. There was this big wedding. They all got married to the cowherd, different boys, and they were all happy. So in other words, by Krishna's arrangement, everyone's desire was satisfied. Their desire being in their different ways according to their situations, that they wanted Krishna as their child, as their husband, or whatever. So this happened. And the parents, the cows and the mothers, cowherd ladies, they were so happy. They were just ecstatic. Finally, 5 or 6 days before the year was up, 5 or 6 days before Balaram's appearance day, in other words, Lord Balaram, who up until that point, he was also, due to the influence of Yogamaya, completely unknowing. He had no idea. Finally, though, 5 or 6 days before the year was up, Lord Balaram started thinking, wait a minute. He had been witnessing all these different things. It hadn't occurred to him yet that the mothers, the cows, they're loving their offspring like they love Krishna, like quite differently to how it is normally. Balaram didn't notice by the influence of Yogamaya. 5 or 6 days before the year was up, Balaram noticed, wait a minute. And he thought, there's something funny going on here. So when this happened, he was out with Krishna and the cowherd boys and the calves still at Govardhan Hill. They were herding, well, as we mentioned the other day, they were playing, really, and the calves were just following behind. They were playing out at Govardhan Hill, down at the base of the hill, on the ground at the base, in front of the hill. But Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men, they were up on top of the hill with the cows. So, suddenly, the cows noticed the calves at the bottom of the hill. And because their love, you know, this would happen from time to time. Their paths would cross out there in the forests and the fields. But this time, because of this excessive development of love for their calves, who are Krishna, the cows when they saw the calves, it became too much. They became totally uncontrollable. So, if you're familiar with Govardhan Hill, and now, of course, it's very small. In those days, Rupa Goswami says, in those days, Govardhan Hill was so big that when the sun god would bring his chariot around, taking it around as he does every day. So when he would come to that area, he would stop for a lunch break, and his horses would eat the grass off the top of Govardhan Hill. So it's very big. But you, I'm sure some of you know what it's like even today. And we don't, of course, we don't walk on Govardhan Hill. But they, the bridge busses in those days, even now they walk on the hill. So there they were, the cowherd men and the cows on top of the hill, way up somewhere. The cows saw the calves. They galloped down the hill. You know what I mean by gallop? Not just gently, you know, from rock to rock, being careful you don't fall. But they ran. Can you imagine these hefty cows? Hefty cows. Bouncing and just flying down the hill. What a scene. With the cowherd men running behind, they hadn't quite, you know, tuned into the presence of their sons. They knew they were there, but they hadn't really focused like the cows had focused on their calves. So running down, and the cows, well, it's described that amongst the calves, there were two age groups. There were the very little ones, and then there were the ones that were maybe a year or so old. And they wouldn't normally drink the milk of their mothers, those slightly older ones. But the cows were so ecstatic, and the calves were so ecstatic, that even these sort of big calves, they were drinking the milk of their mothers. And the mothers were ecstatic to have their milk drunk like that. So this was going on. And the cowherd men came running down just behind them, ready to get angry with the boys. But when they saw the boys, who were all Krishna, their hearts just melted. And they embraced their sons. They were going to chastise them. What do you think you're doing? But they embraced their sons. And there's a Vedic practice. You don't kiss a person and sort of, you know, slobber on them or whatever. Something like that. You smell the head. It's much more refined than kissing. Although sometimes they kiss. But with their children, they would smell their heads. And this was a very affectionate gesture on the part of the parents. So the cowherd men, they smelled the heads of their sons. They were embracing their sons. They were crying tears of love for their sons, who were all Krishna. So then Balaram, he really got it right. These are all you. They're all expansions of you. So around that time, Lord Brahma came back. He had taken the cowherd boys and calves, hidden them in some cave somewhere. And according to his perception of time, he came back more or less instantaneously. He just put them there, sort of put some rock in the way so they couldn't get out. They put them in caves, put some rock in the way so they couldn't get out. Then immediately came back to have a good laugh. Ha, ha, ha. You know, you're the Supreme Lord, are you? Look at this. Expecting Krishna to be in total anxiety. I lost not only my calves, but all my friends. Expecting Krishna to be like traumatized. But he came back and he saw that all the calves and cowherd boys are still there. Wow. What's going on? So he quickly went back. Must have been very quickly. Because this other, you know, going and then coming back took a year. But he quickly went back to check. Are they still in the caves where I put them? And they were. Then he came back to Vrindavan. There's Krishna and the cowherd boys and the calves. So Lord Brahma became bewildered. Completely bewildered. Then on top of all that, all the demigods appeared. All the mystical potencies appeared in their personal forms. Many Lord Brahmas came. The personified time factor came. You know, you could say anybody who was anybody in the universe, they all came. And they're all offering obeisances to Krishna. And then Lord Brahma realized, whoops, I see, small mistake. So what do you say, you know, when you do something like that? Sorry. So he didn't really know what to do. It was too much. You know, what to speak of Lord Indra after the Govardhan Leela? Wow. What do you say after you've tried to kill someone unsuccessfully? Sorry. Please don't mind too much. So Lord Brahma, oh, he felt so bad. So he came, and there's one place in Vrindavan. Well, there's a couple of places. They sort of compete with each other, where Lord Brahma is meant to have approached Krishna and then offered his prayers and apologies and begged for forgiveness and everything. So Lord Brahma came, and he was crying tears out of his eight eyes and begging Krishna, please, please forgive me. Those prayers are there. They're great prayers. Actually, in his commentary on the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, which is the prayers of Lord Brahma here at this time, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says, like an invocation to the chapter, it's a particularly important chapter, he says, I will cross the ocean of material existence on the boat of the prayers of Lord Brahma. These are very important prayers with very detailed commentaries by the acharyas. So, there's Lord Brahma offering his prayers. And Krishna, according to the Bhagavatam, Krishna, still with the yogurt, fruit, and rice in his left hand, even you see there's the picture in the Bhagavatam, Krishna standing there sort of nonchalantly looking away. Lord Brahma is saying, you are the Lord of everything. I surrender to you, and you are the greatest. Time is coming from you. Lord Krishna is looking around like, ho-hum, you know, how long are you going to be? That sort of thing. Krishna was thinking, I hope he's going to finish soon, because I want to get back to my real business, having lunch with my cowherd boyfriends. But I don't want to just leave him here. He seems very upset. So I don't want to just walk away, and he may feel even worse. So I'll stand here. But Vishwanath Chakravarti, according to the Bhagavatam, doesn't really say if Krishna said anything or what was he exactly thinking. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says that Krishna's silence indicates the following thoughts. Where did this four-headed Brahma come from? What's he doing? What are these words he's speaking? I'm busy looking for my calves. I'm just a cowherd boy, and I don't understand all this. So even though Krishna, of course, he understood, that's why he expanded himself into those forms and carried on this whole program for 1 year, because he understood. But here, Yogamaya covers him again. And Krishna is sincerely thinking that, why are you saying these things about me? I'm not like that. I'm just a cowherd boy. I got to get back to my cowherd boyfriends. So then all the original cowherd boys, the pastime finishes. The cowherd boys and calves are at the same place. Well, the cowherd boys are there. Then Krishna comes back with the calves. And the cowherd boys say, oh, you've returned so quickly. We have not eaten even one morsel in your absence. Please come here and take your meal without disturbance. So they pat Krishna on the back. Thanks for being a good sport and getting all the calves back. But you just sit and take your lunch. 1 year later. Yes. So this is a very mystical, transcendental pastime. And the anatharas, we said, is that we may have the propensity to think that the pastimes in which Krishna's form as Krishna, the cowherd boy in Vrindavan, is not so important as Lord Narayan, the great, powerful, magnificent, glorious Supreme Personality of Godhead. We may think the form of Krishna is not that important. We may think that Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan are not so important. So many people do, actually. The Sri Sampradaya particularly. They think Krishna is a Leela expansion of Narayan. And, you know, interesting point. In the second to last chapter of the 10th canto, Mahavishnu steals the sons of the Brahmin couple. Krishna goes with Arjuna to get them back. Mahavishnu tells him that when you've finished your pastimes, just come back into me. Sometimes even Mahavishnu thinks that Krishna is an expansion of him. Anyway, that's another thing. But, you know, this tendency to think that Krishna is not exactly the original Supreme Personality of Godhead is quite a big thing. It's really quite a big thing. So, there's a very nice pastime of Lord Chaitanya in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya is in Sri Rangam for the Chaturmasya. And he's having a little sort of, he's joking. He's debating with Venkatabhatta. He's joking, but Venkatabhatta is very serious. So the debate is, who is superior? That grand and glorious Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha, or Krishna the cowherd boy? Who is really the greatest? Who is supreme and who comes second? So of course, Venkatabhatta, being a strict Sri Vaishnava, he's saying that Narayan, obviously. He's so great, he's so powerful. It's obvious he's the supreme. Krishna, he just plays around herding cows, you know. Stuff like that, kills demons, but he's not so great. So they're having this little debate. And Lord Chaitanya, in a joking way, says, all right, if that's the case, Why did Lakshmi leave Narayan to try to enter the rasa dance? And Venkatabhata says, well, that's okay. There's no problem with that. After all, she is the chaste wife of Narayan, and any chaste wife, she would like to be with her husband when he does his different activities. He does this, he does that, he does so many things. She would like to be with him in all those different situations, to share with him, so that's all right. Lakshmi is the wife of Narayan, and Krishna's an expansion of Narayan. He has nice pastimes. So therefore, it's only natural, actually. Nothing wrong with it. It's good. It's natural that she would want to be with him in this sort of playful feature of his. So there's no problem. That's all right. So Lord Chaitanya replied, yes. Okay, that's all right. But you tell me then, why was she not able to enter the rasa dance? She tried for hundreds of years with great endeavor. In fact, she's still trying. She's still there trying in Balvan and Vrindavan, performing severe austerities to try to enter the rasa dance. Still she hasn't entered the rasa dance. So Lord Chaitanya asked Venkatabhata, how's that? He's just an expansion, Krishna, of the Supreme, Narayan. But here, the wife is not able to join him. She can't do it. So why is that? So Venkatabhata, he was forced to admit, I can't answer that question. I don't know. So then Lord Chaitanya explained that it's because Krishna is supreme. These are the supreme pastimes. To enter the pastimes, you need the supreme qualification. She doesn't have it. Actually, she's trying to go about getting it in the wrong way. You don't enter the Vrindavan pastimes by doing austerities, standing on your head for 100 years, you know, 1,000 press-ups, can you imagine? After 1,000 press-ups, maybe you'll be getting closer to seeing Krishna. Doesn't work like that. You have to follow in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. In other words, she wanted to enter the rasa dance. She would have had to have become a little gopi girl in Vrindavan, just like Kamsa. She would have had to have gone through the same program, collecting the cow dung, making the cow dung patties, and everything else, collecting the firewood, and so on and so on, in some quaint little cottage or hut even. So Lakshmi, she felt, that's not for me. I'm Lakshmi. I'm the goddess of fortune. You know, I'm very opulent and I'm very attractive. So why shouldn't I? Why shouldn't Krishna be willing to have me in the rasa dance? But he wouldn't. And he didn't. And she hasn't so far, and that's it. So, that's one incident, very nice incident with Lord Chaitanya, where this point becomes very apparent. There's another incident, actually, also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Hira Panchami festival. It takes place. It's like one of these days coming up, actually, I think, Hira Panchami. It's during the Ratha Yatra. Ratha Yatra goes on for a week or so. So at some point, while Jagannath is down at Gundicha, which is Vrindavan, at some point, the goddess of fortune comes from the Jagannath temple wondering, what's going on? What is my husband doing with these forest people? You know, walking around barefoot in the forest with the cows. What's going on? He's the Lord of everything. So why, are they keeping him there? Or what's wrong with him? So therefore, it's part of the Jagannath festival, actually. The goddess of fortune goes down with her associates to the Gundicha temple, to Vrindavan, and they accost the associates of Lord Jagannath and arrest them and beat them. They beat the Rathyatrakat with sticks. And then order the servants of Jagannath, you have to bring Jagannath back immediately. The goddess of fortune wants him back. She has spoken. So the associates of Jagannath, they all bent kneeling down, and as if they're very humble, they understand. They say, yeah, we'll bring him right back. So a few days later, they bring him back. So Lord Chaitanya was watching this festival with his associates. And Srivas, who's Narada Muni, who's an inhabitant of Vaikuntha, Srivas, when he saw this happen, the associates of Jagannath there in Vrindavan, kneeling down, begging for mercy, the Rathyatrakat being beaten with sticks, then Srivas, he became ecstatic in the mood of Vaikuntha. He said, just see the glory of my goddess of fortune. All these Brijbasi people just bowing down. She's so great. And he was telling Swarup Damodar, who is a Brijbasi, you, all your Brijbasi people, they just churn. They just milk the cows and churn the yogurt. What? Where is their opulence? What is their position? So Lord Chaitanya, he laughed and said, Srivas, you're becoming influenced by the nature of Narada Muni, which is true because he is. So then Swarup Damodar replied that actually, Vrindavan is more opulent. This is an interesting point. Vaikuntha is not as opulent, actually, as Vrindavan. Because in Vrindavan, Chintamani Prakara Sadmasu Kalpavriksha, all the ground is Chintamani. In Vaikuntha, it's not quite the same. All the trees are wish-fulfilling trees. All the cows are unlimited Surabhi cows. All the gopis are, Prabhupada says, the way he translates the verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, super goddesses of fortune. Yeah. They and all this Chintamani, they just wear it as bracelets. The big Chintamani wish-fulfilling stones, they just use to hold their doors open in their houses so they can see when is Krishna coming. But it's not like that in Vaikuntha. That sort of opulence is not there in Vaikuntha. Lakshmi, she has a throne of jewels. But it's not that everything is jewels in Vaikuntha. So, like this, there was this exchange, and Lord Chaitanya, he gave sort of the judgment at the end that you, Srivas, you're defeated. Vrindavan rules. Vrindavan is supreme. So it's like that. But they love Krishna so much, they don't bother. They don't care about the opulence in Vrindavan, even though it's greater. Hare Krishna. So there, a little bit about the pastime of Brahma Vimohana. Srila Prabhupada ki.